Welcome to the Clear Creek County Town Hall with our elected officials. This town hall is sponsored by the Clear Creek Democrats. My name is Lori Beckel. I'm the chair of the Clear Creek Democrats. And we are very, very happy that you are all here. And we are also broadcasting this town hall out to our listeners out there in K-Goat land. So thank you very much, Mark Cuccinella, for doing that. Randy Wheelock got our sound set up for tonight. Thank you, Randy. We had a lot of wonderful help putting together the meal deal. So we have food. And if you haven't figured out your lunch plans tomorrow, I think we're going to have a few extra sandwiches. So maybe you would think about taking a sandwich for your lunch tomorrow. Anyway, so we just are so very, very fortunate to have the elected officials in front of us tonight. Leslie Smith is on the end. Representative Leslie Smith. Senator Dylan Roberts is next. Heidi McConnell, our DA, is next. And then our very own county commissioners, Rebecca, George, and Jody. And so happy to have them. And what a great job they're doing in the midst of budget season, and a whole lot of things have been going on in the county. So maybe, Leslie, you would kick us off, and why don't you each just spend a few minutes touching on items that are on your mind this evening?
Great. Thank you, Lori, and thank you for the Clear Creek County Dems for arranging this, and the sandwiches are delicious, so do think about buying one for tomorrow. So I'll just mention a few things. First of all, I've got a flyer up here regarding the bills I passed last year and a card. If you would like to get my newsletter, which during the interim we just send out once a month so I don't bombard you, take a card and email me and we'll get you on the list. One thing I wanted to mention is a bill that I worked on last year, which I had to pull. It was a bill around failing septic systems and trying to develop a low-income, a low-interest loan program for low-income individuals. And it turns out, and George does not know this yet, but the School of Public Ed did a white paper on this, looking at other states, and came up with some great ideas. And so then we started meeting with some of the departments in our state, and it turns out that I can't do anything as far as a bill goes. And, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to move forward with this. So I'm really, I was sad that I had to let it go last session, and I'm really sad that I can't write a bill and try to develop this program. But we do have some ideas, but it's going to take somebody to help with that. One thing that, we tend to be on interim committees during the off season, and I was on the Wildfire Matters Committee, and I know that's of big importance to everyone. And because of the budget situation, normally these committees, there's several bills that come out of it, and we were limited to three. We have a bill that didn't get voted through the committee, but Senator Marchman has taken it on herself, and hopefully it will be a bill that will help lower insurance rates for homeowners that live in areas like this, where, or like my whole district, that are very prone to fire. The last thing is, I was on the Education Committee. I got switched to the Energy and Environment Committee, so I'm really excited. I've got probably three or four bills that are going through that committee, a couple on clean energy, one on plastics, Yeah, so I'm excited about that. And I've got something on transportation safety, which I know some of you are interested in terms of safety for bike riders and so forth. So I'm going to be carrying that bill too. So, and I look forward to any questions that you have, and I'm happy to talk to anybody afterwards. And thanks again for having us.
Hi, good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for coming and for your interest tonight. I'm Dylan Roberts, honored to be your state senator for Clear Creek County in Senate District 8, which stretches from here in Clear Creek and Gilpin all the way to Utah and then all the way north to Wyoming and north central northwest Colorado. And good to be here with my colleagues who am honored to work with on the criminal justice level as well as the county level and, of course, Representative Smith down at the Capitol. You all are probably aware, but we are, as Rep. Smith noted, we are not in session right now at the Colorado Capitol. We go back for our regular sessions starting on January 14th. So we are definitely in the busy time right now of figuring out which piece of legislation we're going to work on, looking at the budget situation here in Colorado, and kind of seeing how this next upcoming legislative session is going to go. We meet for every year for 120 days, so we'll start on January 14th and go until May 13th this year. This is a great time for us to connect with you and hear about any ideas or challenges you have as we get ready for this upcoming legislative session. Just wanted to preface before I talk quickly about some of the bills I'm working on, kind of the big theme for this upcoming year, and I imagine we're going to hear similar things from our county commissioners and our DA, is we face some significant budget challenges here in Colorado, but at the state level and at the local level, and that's going to be the big theme of this upcoming legislative session. When we had our town hall here in May, after the most recent legislative session, you might remember we talked about we had to cut about $1.2 billion from our annual state budget in order to balance our budget. This upcoming legislative session, it looks like we're going to have anywhere between $800 million and $1 billion to cut again in order to balance our budget. And unlike D.C., we have to pass a balanced budget in Colorado, so there's no way around that. We can go through some of the variety of circumstances that have led us to this place, combination of Tabor restrictions and growing Medicaid costs and lack of federal funding that we're seeing. So that's going to be a challenge, and it's going to be a difficult session in terms of what we cut from our state budget, the biggest things being Medicaid, K-12 education, transportation, and then everything else that the state government funds. So those will be some difficult conversations, and definitely want to hear from you about any priorities that you have. In terms of the legislation I'm working on, I'm really excited about some road safety bills that I'm also working on. I know transportation safety and infrastructure is very important in counties like Clear Creek. I'm excited to see those no left lane signs for the semis go up. That was because of a bill we passed last year, so I'm glad that those are up here and around Georgetown. When the Floyd Hill construction is done, they'll be on Floyd Hill as well. Working on some more road safety legislation, some affordable housing legislation to try to allow counties a little more flexibility in the money that they can spend on housing projects, looking into, I'm the chair of the Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee, so I do a lot of work in agriculture and water legislation. Of course, protecting Colorado's water continues to be a major priority and challenge for our state, so we'll be working on those things. But going to be a very interesting, difficult, but hopefully a productive session coming up, and look forward to the discussion tonight about it. So I'll hand it over to Heidi. There you
go. Well, good evening. Hi, I'm Heidi McCollum. I'm the district attorney for the 5th District, which is Eagle, Summit, Lake, and Clear Creek counties. So while I think that's a big district, it's nowhere near as large as Senator Roberts. So. A handful of things. I'm happy to answer any questions that any of you have about what's going on in my office here, specifically in Clear Creek County. A couple highlights I can let you know. George might have the exact date, but I know we do have, or any of the commissioners might, we have a new sheriff, Ron Thornton, who's been with the sheriff's office for about 9 years, and he's local. I've spoken with him, and he's in constant communication with my office. So we also work with the undersheriff, you know, quite well, and we're looking to it being a very productive relationship. I know that, you know, in the not too distant past that my office has been at odds with the sheriff's office, and we actually talked about that issue as well. And you know, we're both on the same page. We each have jobs to do, and you know, we will do everything we can to work together to get those done. And want just to let everyone know that, like Senator Roberts said, we all are anticipating budget cuts. And a couple of the huge budget cuts that affect my line of work, not just the budgets that that we get from the counties, and my budget is actually based on a four-part rubric between all four of the counties, and it's calculated out. It's based on caseload, county population, gross sales tax revenue, and mean property values. And when you put that into the rubric, it really doesn't matter what order you put it in or what importance you put. Eagle County wins in all of those categories. And Lake County comes in, fourth place in all of those categories. And so when we submit a budget, we submit it to all four counties, and then there is a county contribution based on that rubric. And that's for my office. But there are other budget cuts which affect what we do. And so there are grants, the VOCA grant and the VAIL grant. So the VOCA grant and the VAIL grant are both grants for the benefit of victims. They provide victim services, and they provide emergency shelter to victims. The crime victim compensation program, which is run out of every district attorney's office. We administer it, and we have a board made up of citizens across the district, and that board makes a determination on what type of financial assistance any one particular victim is able to obtain. It could be for out-of-pocket medical expenses. It could be in a domestic violence situation. It could be to pay to have the locks changed on their doors or their windows. It can pay for funeral expenses for surviving family members if there's a homicide case. And the funding for the crime victim compensation, some of the funding for the other victim grants, actually comes from some of the fees that people pay when they end up going to court. So there are, every defendant, I don't know who here has ever gotten a speeding ticket. I'm not asking you to, okay. So if you're an elected official, you should tell me, but no one else has to admit it. I've gotten them before. And, you know, you pay the fine, but then there are fees and court costs. And those fees and those court costs, while it might be somewhat annoying to have to pay that little extra, please understand that that money goes to cover some pretty important costs for people who have been unwittingly pulled into the system. And right now, our crime victim compensation program is continuing to collect those fees and to have those paid, because the VOCA grants and the VAIL grants are being cut dramatically. And there are DA's offices across the state which are having to cut back their victim service personnel. These are the people who are the middle, they're the middleman between the prosecutor and the victim. And they're the ones who tell the victim what the court case is coming up, what's the next date, and to make sure that they have a safe place to be when they're in the courthouse. They'll escort them over into the courtroom, escort them back, and coordinate witnesses and coordinate victims when they're going to testify. And it's incredibly important that we keep as many of those as possible. So we all are feeling those budget cuts across the board. I know the commissioners, I had presented to them as well. While I have to present to four sets of county commissioners, you know, the response, it's my favorite thing to do. It's the response from all of them is really the same. And my department is no different than any of the other county departments, whether it's the Lake County building department, or it's the Eagle County Human Resources Department, or it's the Clear Creek County Clerk and Recorder's Office, that everyone is being hit by this. And it's not that the commissioners don't want to provide every department or every office with the funds that they ask for. It's just that I don't think this year they're able to. So to the extent I can say we understand, I do understand. Doesn't mean I'm not going to keep asking, because I will. But I'm happy to answer it. Like I say, any questions. There are a couple big cases that are in the news that I think are going to break either tonight or tomorrow. I can let you know the homicide of Paul Peavy. The defendant in that case took a plea today, and he pled. He'll be sentenced later, and I can't really get into much of the details, but anything that happens in open court I can speak about. He did plead today to two counts, one of second-degree murder and the other aggravated robbery, and he took a plea to a 55-year sentence. So, and he will be sentenced in January. But those are the outlines of that. So, yeah. All right, I'll turn it over.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you for coming. I'm Rebecca Lloyd. I'm your representative from the far east end of the county, kind of bordering Jeffco. But I get myself, I've been working really hard this past year, my first year in office, to get up to speed on the issues. Still working on it, but I will keep at it. We have, all three of us have been working really hard on a lot of issues. First of all, the budget, and we've been working with the department heads to keep next year's budget lean without sacrificing needed county services or losing more of our excellent employees. I just have to make one little point to the DA's rubric about your four counties. It's like, yes, we may have a lot more crime, but we also have 35,000 vehicles a day driving through our county. And we have 9,100 people, so I'm hoping you'll give us a little leeway on that. I am, speaking of I-70, I've been serving on the I-70 Coalition and the Collaborative Effort Team to keep Clear Creek County in the conversation with CDOT. We do not want them paving over Idaho Springs as they keep wanting to expand the lanes and send everybody up to the mountains. First of all, some of our colleagues in the mountain communities are like, hey, we're full. We don't have any more parking. Stop building to capacity. And the other issue is CDOT really does no plans to do a third bore in the Eisenhower-Johnson Memorial Tunnel. So why are they trying to send, an extra lane through Clear Creek? So anyway, we're going to fight to keep those lanes narrow through Clear Creek and, the peak period shoulder lane, just that, not a 24/7 Mountain Express lane. We, as you all know, we've hired a new county manager, Colton Roloff, and we've appointed the new sheriff, Ron Thornton. I've been working on the Housing Authority. They've had a bit of a setback when the newly appointed executive director decided that the commute was too much for him. Coming up the hill. I'm like, oh, poor baby, I used to commute to Denver, But anyway, I'm sorry, that was snarky. We also lost one of our board members, so we're working to shore that up before we can really get going. We have, I'll let you guys talk about some of this, but STRs, we're taking that very seriously. We're upping our code enforcement. We're able to work with Airbnb to... we let them know when somebody's permit has lapsed so they don't keep listing an unpermitted STR. I'll let George and Jody talk about state legislation and our excellent conference we just went to. And also, this is kiddos to George and kudos to George and Jody working on 1A that the fabulous Clear Creek County voters supported. Our fire authority hadn't gotten an increase in mills since the 80s. So
It was time, we needed it, and it will help keep us all safer. We've been working at the Forest Service for wildfire mitigation issues, and just today, I participated in a joint meeting with Evergreen Fire Rescue, Clear Creek Fire Authority, local local law enforcement, and Office of Emergency Management. We're working on a fire evacuation drill. It is on my side of the county, but the agencies are going to learn a lot from it. People will learn a lot from it. We want to know where the pinch points are. This is going to happen in late spring. But it's really, you know, we all look around. We see stands of dead trees on our egress roads. So this is something to identify, particularly where the pinch points are, where people are all backed up trying to evacuate their neighborhood. So that's it for me. I'll turn it over to George.
Thank you. Hi, good evening. I'm George Marlin. I represent the central part of the county, Floyd Hill to York Gulch.
West side of Floyd Hill. I've got a significant portion of Floyd
Hill. Yeah, I guess you have most of Floyd Hill now.
I do.
Counties do a lot, and the board, we divide representation among different things. Some of the stuff that is going on with the county. We have been, during my entire time in office, working on a serious fiscal crisis. We have lost a third of our revenues in the last 10 years. During that time, we have become probably the leanest county in the state in terms of what our staff does with the numbers they have. This year, one of the things that we did was we looked around at other counties to compare ourselves. And our teams are across every team and every metric doing more with less than almost anybody else. And I'm really proud of our staff for what they put out. We continue to look for opportunities to be efficient and innovate. And along those lines, we're looking at the buildings that house our staff right now. We will be looking to get more staff into the courthouse in Georgetown. We were probably going to be able to sell this building over here, the Resource Center, and the annex. It's called the Annex in Georgetown, where the planning department is. So that'll save us some money and maybe even improve the staff situation, people being closer together. We have some consultants helping us look at our jail. We are at a little bit of a crossroads in our jail where it's going to need a lot of money to continue to operate it. It is not the jail that it was when we were housing a large number of federal inmates. And so we're looking at some options. The options are figure out how to get more federal inmates into the jail. We can charge, basically the federal government will pay us to house their inmates. We had a jail that was built very large with the idea that we were all going to get rich taking care of federal inmates, and it didn't quite work out like that. So one of the options is to figure out what it would cost in terms of capital to lean back into that program and whether we can make that work. The other option is, do we remodel the jail so that we can operate it more efficiently? And then the third option is, what does it look like for us to house our inmates in another county? And so we're going to be talking a lot about jail next year. Keep your eyes out for that one. It's a really important thing that we do, right? When you hold people unwillingly, it's important to take care of them right. And it's one of the most expensive things that counties do. I think right now we spend around $3 million a year on that jail, so 15% of our budget or so. I have been assigned to, I think categorically, behavioral health and fire stuff. I'm on our fire authority board. I'm on the board of NOCO Places Fire Shed, which is a regional collaboration. I'm on a regional child care group, the behavioral health center, and a group that makes decisions about how to spend opiate money. So that's what I am kind of specializing in right now. I'm happy that Rebecca mentioned housing and Jody will mention childcare, two things that are really important to me that I'm happy to Share to love. Those are fun issues, right? But what's on my mind? You asked what's on my mind tonight. What's on my mind is, this is all just like, what did a county do? I could have given you that answer in 2019. But what's on my mind right now is, what are we going to do? Because the federal government, we're learning, we can't rely on. And not only are they imposing very stringent standards on people who need help, but they're reducing the amount of money we have to help people get through those standards. And that impacts county government directly. We're the ones that deliver those services that help people get qualified for Medicaid, for SNAP. We all remember the SNAP shutdown. Jody will probably talk about what she did during the shutdown to make sure that food banks were out there. We found a little bit of money to help prop that up. But this is a year of, I think, the state government and county governments figuring out how we're going to invest in ourselves and how we can figure out how to rely on ourselves, because it's a very different landscape out there.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jody Hartman-Ball. I represent the St. Mary's to, I would say, Bakerville. I don't know if anybody lives past that. I'm in district
and Loveland ski area,
the business. Yeah. So kudos to all the work that everybody on this panel has done. It's been a rough year, as a new person on the, commission board. I wanted to do a lot of things, and I realized there's a lot of things that we cannot do. There's a lot of statute that kind of restricts us on, you know, going and fixing the mobile home parks. Or that was my first thing. I'm like, we're going to fix this, and there's things that we can't do. So the budget is what we're working on now. That is a tough one. 46.9 average budget that we deal with. And I think Clear Creek was a little bit ahead of the times, as George says. So they were doing a lot of budget cuts before. And when we walked in, I see former commissioners here that worked really hard to protect the county. When I was running and I got into this, I assumed that we were going to walk into no money. But these commissioners put money into a reserve. And this reserve is what's getting us through right now. And we're looking at probably $1.8, $1.9 million of going into that reserve just to protect the services that we provide to you all, the transfer station, sheriff's department, you know, the things that keep us going, keep us safe. So the things that I've been working on is childcare, which I work on with Mitch Houston. He's in the audience right now. We had a meeting today, and something that we worked on last year was a scholarship program. And this is going to set us up so when we get the new childcare facility opened up, hopefully we'll get some more funding for that. We'll have a base. We're losing families, and we need these kids to stay here. So we're trying to keep this base, I don't know if you want to call them just the clientele. And so the scholarship program comes from the lodging tax. The lodging tax is collected off the STRs, the hotels. And it's roughly, what, $320 million? Thousand. It would be wonderful if it was millions. So $90,000 goes to the child care. And all of that money got allocated. I think it was 35 families applied. And so hopefully we can do that next year. We're going to start a little bit earlier. Another $90,000 goes to housing, which Rebecca is on the Housing Authority. That is just getting going. They need a director and all that. And then the other goes to the tourism board. So that is something that we also meet, is with the tourism resilience and the tourism board, and trying to figure out, where is Clear Creek going? Are we going to just become this big tourism thing, which I see people in the audience are saying no. So we need some balance. And I also belong to NOCO Places. Not to confuse you with NOCO Places Fire Shed, that is different. NOCO Places works on the mapping. Part of that was Randy Wheelock that's in the audience. And this is unauthorized trails. This is getting ambassadors to the area, trying to educate people. NOCO Places got together with some influencers. We all talk on Facebook, or we have different ways that we are getting educated. The young people, they're different. They're going to Snapchat. They're on Reddit. So we've got to find a way to educate them, and not through, they're not watching 9 News like we did. So they made up some videos on how to be safe in Clear Creek County. If you noticed, a lot of the stuff that we you know, have up here that drive people to come up and visit requires a helmet. So it's a dangerous area and people get hurt and we have to provide those services. So if we can educate people to not come up and get hurt, that would save us a lot of money. And then I also just wanted to talk about, we did get us a new county manager and new sheriff. We appointed those not that long ago. So I'm hoping with those two, we're going to have a lot of changes. And with this board, we're working really hard to, you know, drive us in a direction that's positive, gives us the change that we need. And I think that's it for me. I could go on and on, but.
Well, terrific opening remarks. Thank you all so much. It really helps us all with our civic engagement to know what's going on, both at the State House, in Heidi's shop, in the courts, and in our county commission. So very important information. So I'll start with a couple of questions that I have, and we'll just begin to go from there. I would like to just mention that George, Commissioner Marlin, and your new county manager will be on What's Upstream with Mark Cuccinelli and myself on Wednesday. That program is our local affairs program. It's on every Wednesday at noon. We have a bunch of interesting programs, typically, and so we'll hear all about the county budget on Wednesday. And then the following Wednesday, we will have the new sheriff on with us, along with the public relations person, Jenny Fulton, will be on with us a week from Wednesday. So this question is to the county commissioners. The question is Clear Creek County going to enforce STRs that don't register with the county?
Yes. Can you define what STRs are?
Yes. Short-term rentals.
I'm going to play the old guy card and pick this one up. Yes, Airbnb, VRBO, those are short-term rentals, STRs. Yes, we have better tools, and we're starting to see results. So thanks to, I think, Dylan, did you work on this one? I know you voted on it. 2023. And this was an idea that came up a few years ago, which is people keep breaking the rules, and when they violate land use code, it can be kind of hard to go after people that are violating land use code, right? Because we also have restraint in that system, right? Like, we're not going to kick you off your property because you've got a rusty car. So we needed a better way. And so now we're able to directly regulate the platforms themselves. So the state gave counties that authority. We went and asked for it. The state gave it to us. And we updated our ordinances late last year, early this year, with Randy Wheelock and Mitch Houston on the board. So it took a while to roll out, but we now are with the platforms. The platforms are required to have a local license and show that local license on their listing. And so if we pull a license from someone, the platforms are required to delist those people. It's not a perfect solution because they can like go to Craigslist and continue to, but it's a much better solution than what we had in the past. We have seen several rule breakers stop renting. We've seen some homes get sold to maybe hopefully some people that want to live here. And I'm not going to try to tell you it's perfect, but I do think it's a lot better. And it's been a focus of lots of boards, and I think we're close to being able to tell you we're effective at it.
So, George, if I could just clarify, this specific question was, what about those STRs that don't register with the county, but neighbors happen to see there's a lot of traffic there? What happens to those guys?
So that's what I was going to say, too. Some of this is going to be based on people going to our website and actually filing complaints. Airbnb and VRBO, they're not going to have those that are not registered because they're working with the county. So if they're finding other places to
advertise like Facebook or something, it's also going to take the public to be able to notify. There's houses that are way out there and we cannot go to every house. So if we get a complaint and we have new code enforcement that's actually stuck around longer than they were in the past, so all this is kind of coming together. So if you go on and you put a complaint, let us know if you don't see results with that, but it's going to take all of us.
So there is enforcement now, but we've got to report it.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Yeah, is there a follow-up question there, Carrie? So Carrie is asking a question about those registered within Idaho Springs and what does that enforcement look like? And we don't necessarily have a member up here who can, I don't know, George, can you answer that?
I mean, yeah, I think talk to them, right? They're their own government. They have the same ability that we do now to regulate the platforms directly, and they can do that.
I always believe in the squeaky wheel theory. If you and your neighbors see a problem, let them know, follow up if they don't do anything about it. That's been the approach on my end of the county, but we are unincorporated and the county, I'm motivated to do something about it, so. Absolutely.
So I can just say, talk to Shane Ball. When we lived in Idaho Springs, we had issues with the sewer lines. Talk to Shane, and he can maybe give you some recommendations on how to get the city to do something about that, because we had shared lines, and yeah.
So, ready for another question. This is to the commissioners and Heidi. Did the county receive grant money from the state for enforcement of the engine muffler law? If so, when can we expect it to start?
Sure. Yeah, Representative Smith and I sponsored this bill that you're referring to. This creates enhanced penalties for not having a muffler on a commercial vehicle. That law is in effect now. It is intended to be enforced by law enforcement, so that could be local law enforcement, so Idaho Springs PD, Clear Creek County Sheriff, but most probable it's going to be enforced by the State Patrol because they're the ones that operate the port of entry at Dumont, and that's where a lot of these checks are going to happen. We anticipate the State Patrol to be the primary enforcer of that law. We have seen increased resources being put towards the I-70 corridor by the State Patrol. It's certainly not where it needs to be. I'll be the first to acknowledge that we need more troopers on this stretch of road. There are a variety of reasons why that's a challenge, but they have been very collaborative in wanting to enforce several of the laws we've passed with regards to commercial vehicles. And we're hoping, we'll see, you know, that this is a big improvement in the law. We're glad we got it done. Now we need it to get enforced, and the State Patrol has verbalized that they're dedicated to doing that. Yeah.
So why do we have to wait until 2023?
there's nothing preventing the State Patrol from doing that. I think most of these checks happen when commercial vehicles are pulled off the road and they're doing the checks for a variety of other things. State Patrol has the ability, or Clear Creek Sheriff, or any other police department to pull a truck over if they set up a listening station or if they see that the truck might not have a muffler on it. I will certainly pass that on to the State Patrol. This is about also creating a culture for the commercial vehicle industry, and they worked with us on this law. They already have, and they'll continue to write tickets. And word starts to get out amongst commercial vehicle drivers that you're going to get a ticket if you don't update your muffler. We're not going to catch every single person that runs a jake brake through Clear Creek County, but we're going to start to change that culture. And the fines are pretty stiff, so that it's something that they want to comply with, I think. Well, I think we'd be glad to bring it up with the State Patrol and ask them if they could set up a listening station or something like that.
Yeah, I can just say that all the construction that was done on Fall River Road, living right above that road, none of those trucks had any appropriate mufflers. It was so loud going up. I mean, and that happened pretty much all summer. I don't know if the law was in effect last summer, but those truckers had not gotten the memo.
Well, and I think, this is my first session, so it was nice to be able to partner with the senator on this. But, you know, there, as he pointed out, there's the chain laws, there's the, stay in this lane, there's the muffler laws. We worked a lot with the motor carrier people, and I think it is a culture change. You know, drivers, when they start hearing that other drivers are getting big fines for not carrying chains or for the jake brakes and so forth, word will get out, and it just probably will take a little bit of time, I think.
That went into effect early August. So.
Oh, early August. It was almost done by then, I think. Yeah, that'd be great, Mark, but I really would like for people, I can't seem to get this microphone off. So, I just wanted to get it off the stand so I could give it to, I have one other, this is to the commissioners, and it's just a request to have a live, real person answer the phone at the courthouse. So this may go to the personnel issues that George was talking about, but that is a request.
I just want to thank Dan Dalps for that question. He's my neighbor. I think he might have left, but Dan, you're right. It's something we'd love to do if we could afford it.
Yeah, it'd be good.
Okay. This question is for Dylan. Dylan, at a state level, with all these enormous budget cuts, has the State Patrol been cut with their budget? Because I know from experience with talking with State Patrol officers, they were already understaffed. And over their jurisdiction is just so big. I mean, one officer, his territory was from pretty much Mount Vernon all the way to the tunnel. And with the increased skiers, tourists, and then our construction out here, have they gotten any kind of relief? And as we talk about improper jake braking, it's not only the design of the mufflers. I mean, you could pull over a semi and say, okay, your muffler does meet standards, but they can still use their jake brakes, and they use them inappropriately. So it's not a matter of just carrying the right equipment, it's how they're driving. Because they can still use those jake brakes. And they're a pain in the neck for everybody. Poor Jim here, he lives right next to the Georgetown Hill. I used to be his neighbor. It's pretty bad. All of Georgetown's really bad. But the question is, did the State Patrol get any more money, or did it get cut?
Thank you for the question. And on the Jake Brake issue, the great example of a bill idea that came right here from all of you in Clear Creek County. Thank you for bringing that to us. Those are the types of bills we love to work on. Like I said, I don't think it's going to solve every problem, but we hope it makes things markedly better, and we're always willing to go back and change it if it needs improvement. But that's a good example of an idea that came up at a town hall like this, so we appreciate it. The State Patrol budget, as far as I know, has not been cut. I think the problem is it's not receiving increases that help us account for the challenges that we face up here in our mountain and rural communities. We talk to the State Patrol often, and we've gotten briefings on their staffing for the I-70 corridor. They have not reduced their number of positions, but they do have trouble filling the positions that are available. So they would like to pay people. They would like to pay troopers to be here, but they're having trouble filling those spots. A couple of reasons. Of course, the cost of living is higher here than it is in other parts of the state, so that trooper still needs to find housing, needs to find, you know, a way to live in some of these communities. And we're trying to help them with that. The State Patrol has partnered with CDOT on a few housing projects, including one in Frisco that just people started moving into over the course of the last year. I think they're going to be partnering on a few other CDOT-related housing projects throughout the Western Slope to bring more troopers up here. The other part is this is a tough area to be a trooper, and we hear that from the State Patrol, is that they'll bring new troopers out from the academy and station them here in 4C is what it's called, the I-70 corridor area, and they'll do their 2 to 3 years of service, and then they'll get transferred to a different part of the state where there's less snow and less traffic issues on mountain highways. So that is a challenge internally for them. But I would love to continue working on, I think if we can make bigger progress on these housing issues and make it easier for troopers, but all law enforcement of all kinds, teachers, nurses, healthcare professionals, everybody that we need to make our communities safe and vibrant, that's what we have to do. And so there is a lot of progress being made on housing. We need to partner more with agencies like CSP and CDOT to get those types of employees here too. But we're hopefully going to see improvements this winter. We've been promised by CDOT and CSP that this winter is going to be better. They made progress last winter. This winter will be even better.
Very good. I promised Carolyn Hone, our vice chair, that I would ask this question, and it really was when we were having conversation about finding a new sheriff for our county. And her question, many of our question, is related to some of the requirements that local officials who run for office have to meet in order to run, like the sheriff. I think there's a residency requirement of over a year. Is that right?
Yeah, it's 1 year before the election. And that's a state statute.
Right, which is why I'm looking at our state legislators about this. And whether any of your other constituents have come to you with some of these maybe quite onerous requirements for people running for a local office, and whether there's any thought, and our commissioners would certainly have thoughts about this too, but whether it makes sense to have a year residency requirement a whole year before the election.
Yeah, and just for an example, we had the undersheriff who actually grew up here, really wants to come back and live here, but right now his kids are, you know, going to school down the hill, and he didn't want to pull them out of school and move up here. So it particularly in a little tiny county like ours, sometimes it's really hard finding the professional staff, particularly when there's that residency requirement.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I've certainly followed the turnover in the sheriff's office here in Clear Creek County. I'm thinking of a few other very small counties that are in my Senate district. Gilpin County, who has a great sheriff, has been there for a while, but then Jackson County is another county in my district, even smaller than Gilpin and Clear Creek, and they just had a sheriff recall election, actually, earlier this year due to a little local scandal there. But this is something that's come up at the Capitol before. We could talk through the pros and cons of it. I think we're getting into the conversation as to why is the sheriff an elected position in the first place? Why do they register with political parties? We have some other county offices that are the same, like the coroner comes to mind, and the surveyor, the assessor. Colorado is actually very unique in electing sheriffs politically. Not a lot of states do that anymore. Coroner is certainly very unique to Colorado. And we've seen some very bad things with elected coroners in our state, and I've worked on some legislation to that effect. So, long way of saying, it's something I'm interested in working on. There are cons as well. Representative democracy is important, and you know, the sheriff is a very powerful office, and the voters having input on that is also valuable, but so maybe not getting rid of the elected part, but you're talking about changing some of the prerequisites to holding that office. And I'm happy to engage in that conversation if Clear Creek and the commissioners and the DA certainly want to talk about changing that state statute. It could be difficult to do, but certainly it's within our power to do it. The feasibility is another question.
And I'm very happy that Ron Thornton is our guy. It was just earlier on, before he even lived here, trying to find someone who has to live here a year ahead of the election and has to know the job, has to know the people. It's really difficult, particularly when you have families down the hill and such. So thank you.
Just to add, just to put some data behind that, both of the last times we had a sheriff resign, especially this time, it was more recent, not a single person in leadership in the sheriff's office was a resident of this county. Right. And so that puts you in a bind. We were lucky that Ron Thornton said, yeah, I'll move here. I'm trying to figure out how to get this not to do that.
Well, thank you. We have about 20 more minutes, and I'm wondering if there are any other questions. And maybe, Ira, would you come up here? Grab a mic. Yeah, that'd be great.
Hi. Well, Heidi, I'd love to ask you this question. I don't know if there is time. How you got somebody to plead to a 55-year sentence. But that may not interest everybody here. But you know, who pleads for 55 years? But I'm curious about that. Seriously, though, about fire mitigation, George, you mentioned it. I see a lot of dead trees coming up by 70. The beetle kill is a really big problem. Tomorrow we have high winds projected. We had a fire in our neighborhood last year because the high winds knocked down a tree onto a power line. The power line sparked a grass, and all of a sudden flames were all over. So can you expand more about what's being done about fire mitigation? Or statewide? Or
I just unplugged that to work on the reverb. We all have a stake in this one. I'm sure our legislators, I know the state of Colorado plays a role. It's another theme where we're trying to figure out how to do it on our own. I wouldn't tell you that the federal government has ever done a great job taking care of the national forests, which make up 75% or so of our land here. I would tell you they're doing a much worse job this year. I was just trying to look through, I signed a letter urging Congress to do something about this recently. I think there's been like a 72% reduction in the amount of work done in this state this year. So we've gone from bad to worse. But locally, we have updated it's called a community wildfire protection plan. You have to have this in order to be eligible for grants. And so we have updated that. It's filed. We're now eligible for grants. The state has done a lot of work to create grant programs. And we have now a district ranger who really is a proponent of mitigation. The last one we really kind of struggled with, we struggled with the last one. But Max Vergency is really interested. Jeremy Jones, the assistant fire chief, is very engaged. The fire authority has a mitigation team, and they're doing work. I think they're focusing on the neighborhoods that where there's both a lot of risk and a lot of organized interest, right? And so York Gulch is a great example of that, where they've been doing a lot of work. But at the local level, it's kind of chip away, help property owners understand what they can do, work on egress routes. At the state level, I mean, you heard about the budget cuts, but everything they can do to create state funding is important. And, you know, maybe someday the federal government will show back up. Lastly, I'll just share, that I do think, in Clear Creek specifically, I think the solution to our problems is working with the water users. The Clear Creek watershed serves people from the Divide to the western edge of Westminster. And is that, I think that's more than a 500,000 people, but that's the number that's coming into my head. If you live in Westminster and you're relying on the 9,200 people in Clear Creek County to make sure you have safe, secure water access, you need a better plan. And there are ways that we can work with them to invest, and I think that's really the big step that we can take locally.
And what he means by that is protecting our watershed from fire and, you know, keeping ash out of the water we're sending downhill.
So. Yes, fires devastate water treatment plants.
I just want to add, too, on the national level, I had been talking to Ranger Max before the shutdown, and things kind of went downhill from there. We have not heard from him yet, but I'm assuming he's got a lot of backup work that he's working on. In NOCO places, we did get some updates. As far as I know, the National Forest is going to be doing some fire mitigation in 2026. Right before the shutdown, Max was trying to get together with Gilpin County and with Clear Creek to do an update on that. So hopefully we'll hear from him soon that there's going to be some massive fire mitigation in the National Forest in 2026. But at the national level, you know, things can change overnight. So with a bathroom tweet or something. So I don't know. But as of what we know, there is going to be fire mitigation in Clear Creek County and Gilpin in 2026.
I think getting your hands on that community wildfire protection plan is a good thing to do. You can find it on the web. And one of the things that I know Joanne and I have been really interested in is the 70-foot corridor coming down I-70. I think many of us are very concerned about all those dead trees coming down I-70. And, you know, a Glenwood Canyon-type fire that could rage right down this valley. So it's good that that protection plan really specifically talks about that, and we'll start working on projects to get funded to take care of that fire mitigation.
Yeah. I just would like to add, when we actually met out at the hangar where they've got the new Firehawk helicopter, which is an amazing piece of equipment. But when we were talking about wildfire mitigation, I brought up Clear Creek as just a clear example of, you know, it's so constrained. There's only I-70 to go through. There's tons of dead trees. And actually, I just found out from a former student who works for the Forest Service, the pine beetle is now jumping species and is really starting to rear its head again. And the Forest Service is really worried. And of course, we all know the Forest Service has been cut back. But, you know, I do raise that flag all the time when I get a chance because it scares me how it is here.
Us too. So I'm wondering, are there any other, Judy, do you want to?
Got a neighborhood that you're concerned about, call Jeremy and have a neighborhood meeting. He'll come out, he'll walk through your properties and tell you what you need to do the fire mitigation around your own homes. He's very willing to do that, and he's very good at it.
Evergreen Fire Department.
Yeah, our
He's also willing to take on your insurance company. And so far, he's batting 100% in getting people who get their policies canceled because of where they live. And he's willing to call and advocate for us with insurance companies. So
I was going to say on top of that, too, with the fire mitigation, we have asked CDOT several times to come out and do some fire mitigation along the highway. As we know, chain sparking, things like that cause fires. They say they have the equipment. They just don't have the manpower. They cannot get people hired to do something like that. I also want to say I do testify with the POC, the Public Utilities Commission, on things like this, fire mitigation. You've seen them replacing the poles. They are warning people they are going to be doing shutdowns during high wind days that they find. If they have like a calculation that they do the same thing that the fire authority does, depending on the humidity of the day, the winds, the area, they can shut us off individually. So that also will be happening. People, hopefully you'll get enough warning that you can plan for it, but expected those things to be happening in Clear Creek County.
Yay. Maggie, do you want to come?
Just one last point really quick. There's a role for all of you in this conversation. Clear Creek does not have a fantastic history of embracing wildfire mitigation projects. It's because we love our forest. And now I think a lot of us have learned that that's not what a healthy forest looks like, and we do have work to do. We need to hear that from you. And so do your legislators, and so do your federal rep. Everybody needs to hear that from you so that we can start to, like, everybody can perceive us as a place that wants this work to be done so that we can be safe.
Commissioner Marlin talked about being kind of controlling our own destiny and not being able to rely on the federal government, having been proven to us over the last couple of years. So really to Representative Smith and to Senator Roberts, you know, we have artificially suppressed our tax revenue in the state with Tabor. And I think we need to start having a serious conversation about what that means for services. Could you maybe talk about what that looks like on the state level?
Well, I will say that there are a group of legislators that are working on a tax where, I'm trying to remember what the cutoff is, 500,000, 300,000, to tax those that are making 300,000 or more. So, because we have to bring in more money, you know, because K-12 used to be the lion's share of the budget, but now it's Medicaid and it's just exploding. And, you know, the governor in his proposal for the budget has some ideas which, you know, the JBC is not very happy about, and neither are providers. So, you know, it's going to be really grim this year. They cut to the bone any money that was just sitting in a pot because of some statute. They took it away. You know, the governor and also the JBC really wants to try to protect K-12 funding. That's a really high priority, but, you know, you can't get blood out of a stone, so we're going to need to figure out a way of getting more money into our coffers.
Could you tell us what JBC is?
The Joint Budget Committee, who they're the ones. Every day I say thank you. I have got two of them in my county, Senator Amabile, and then Representative Brown from Louisville just got appointed when Shannon Bird went off. But they are doing Herculean work, and they're working 9 to 5 every day right now, getting updates from departments and just trying to figure out where we might be able to make those cuts.
So what I would add here is so Rep. Smith is right, and you're absolutely right about the limitation on the revenue that Colorado gets to keep it within the state government and in local governments versus how well our economy is doing. We're the only state in the country that has the Taxpayer Bill of Rights, or Tabor, and that restricts the amount of money that the state government is allowed to keep and use for essential services to a very kind of outdated formula, in my opinion. Tabor was passed by the voters in 1992, so it's over 30 years old now. The formula is population growth plus inflation, and it's CPI inflation, so regular consumer price index. that has not accounted for medical inflation being so much higher, and that's why Medicaid is causing such a strain on our budget, is that we have increased medical costs that we are taking care of, you know, low-income people, disabled children, seniors in nursing homes, a variety of things, important things to provide funding for, but the cost of that has gone up so much more than what the state budget allows us to have. So I think this period of pain, it could lead to a realization by the voters of Colorado that we need to make some changes. Tabor is in our Constitution, so the legislature alone cannot change it. Any sort of changes to Tabor or tax policy in Colorado has to be approved by the voters. And so Rep. Smith noted there are two proposals I'm aware of potential ballot measures that will be on your ballot this coming fall, November of 2026. One is the graduated income tax, is what they're calling it, where it would be a tax cut, in the income tax cut for 90% of Coloradans and an income tax increase for the top 10% of earners in Colorado. If that were to pass, it would keep Tabor still in place. You would still get to vote on tax increases and things like that, but it would alleviate a lot of our budgetary challenges at the state and then down to the local level. The other one is a little bit smaller, but I think could also have significant benefit to Colorado. This would essentially separate education funding out from the Tabor cap and out from the everything else in the state budget, allow us to better fund K-12, but also alleviate the pressures that K-12 puts on everything else that we need to fund. So groups and coalitions are forming and starting to do polls and fundraise for both of those measures. I think it's more likely than not that it will be either or, and those two groups need to decide which one they're going to pursue, because they have to go out and get signatures to get it on the ballot and then run a campaign to get it passed, because these are constitutional changes for the most part. But it requires engaged folks like you who are showing up to a town hall on a cold night in December, who care about Colorado and your local communities, to spread the word. We are not trying to eliminate, or these ballot measures are not trying to eliminate Tabor. You still get to vote on tax increases, the parts of Tabor that I think most Coloradans know and appreciate, but they don't know about everything else and the downstream consequences that it's had for really important services in Colorado. So we'll need, one of those gets on the ballot, folks like you to spread the word. So as far to your first question, the state of Colorado is engaged in many active lawsuits against the federal government right now. Attorney General Weiser has been very active, and his office has been very active since the new president was inaugurated in January. I think it's up to 30-something lawsuits at this point. Some of them related to funding, other related to policy and legal matters. But Colorado is more active than most other states in terms of federal litigation. As far as withholding tax dollars, I've talked to Senator Immobile about this. She's a member of the Joint Budget Committee, and some other states have explored this. I don't think any state has really jumped off or taken that plunge quite yet of actually withholding revenue to the federal government. But it is something that I know our Joint Budget Committee is looking at. We did pass a bill last legislative session that created a small pot of money, but meaningful to allow the state government to engage in litigation when adverse actions are taken by the federal administration. And so there is funding available to pursue some of those legal claims. It's a risky move, right? Because if we really poke them in the eye, they could poke us back even harder. And we are still receiving a decent amount of federal funding for important things. We get a lot of attention for the things we don't get, but we don't want to jeopardize everything because that would hurt a lot of people.
I just want to add to not to this question, but just to the what do we do about Tabor, and I'm sure you guys love it when I bring this up while we're on stage together. Actually, I think you're both supportive of this idea. There is something that the legislature can do tomorrow. Actually, they're not in session tomorrow, to make Tabor better, right, which is to give you all better options. The graduated income tax is a version of this, right, is a statewide version. But they can pass bills to give counties the ability to propose different types of taxes. And I know, Dylan, we've talked about that ad nauseum and worked on that, and maybe we'll get something done this year, or maybe we'll keep working on it in the future. But right now, for us to provide a service, we can either charge you a property tax, and I see everybody nodding about how much they love that, or we can charge a sales tax, right? So we can tax, like, diapers and period products and loaves of bread to provide services. That's how we show up when you call 911 with our ambulance. So the legislature, with simple majorities and a governor's signature, and that's not as easy as it all sounds, can just give us better options. And there's a lot out there. So I can't not say that. Well, here's an example. In Clear Creek County, if we could propose taxes on the recreation industry, we wouldn't be complaining to you about our budgets anymore. But there are other examples out there, too, right? Like, we see a lot of water bottles that get bought in our gas stations and thrown on our highway. That's another example. So there's a lot out there. There's real estate transfer taxes. Like, 4 or 5 municipalities around the state have this thing called a real estate transfer tax. That's why they get to invest in housing the way that they do in Vail and Breckenridge, and the rest of us are going, wow, that looks really nice. So, rant over. But I think it's a really important thing. We can make Tabor better. We're always going to be voting on our taxes in Colorado, but we can give ourselves better options.
Hi, thank you all for being here tonight. I really appreciate it. A couple of questions and some more sort of speech stumping. Just thinking about K-12, there's a slate of elected officials that we have in the county, obviously, that aren't here tonight. They're nonpartisan. That's the Board of Education. They're facing some really huge challenges this year, and I just encourage everyone to show up to school board meetings. We have 2 brand new school board members. Any elected office that you're entering into is like drinking from a fire hose. They need our support because our students are going to be affected by budget cuts that trickle down to the school board and to our schools and our students. So please just show up. Those meetings are usually the third Thursday of the month. The next one's December 18th at 5:30, the middle school and high school. You can also attend virtually. The schedule's on the school's website. So please remember the school board and those newly elected school board members who are going to be facing huge challenges in the coming years. Also, I just want to say, just thinking about leadership at the state, we lost a huge champion in Colorado the day before Thanksgiving. Senator Faith Winter was killed in a car crash. And I've gotten to know her over the years a little bit. I didn't know as much about her as I thought I did, you know, after her passing and all the stories that have been written, and how accomplished she was and how effective she was and how she stood up for so many things that I believe in that are important to me, parental rights, sexual harassment at the workplace, reproductive rights, women's leadership, supporting women. And most importantly, I think her impact has been being a mentor to other people, especially women running for office. So I guess I'm just asking Senator Roberts and Representative Smith to affirm that you'll carry forward her legacy, because she was phenomenal. She worked on some 220 bills over the course of her career. She was a superhero, and we're so lucky to have you. You both are incredibly effective and intelligent, engaged, and informed. Not all legislators, I think, are like that, or people who are running for office. So I just hope you can mentor other people so that Colorado stays strong. And then I actually do have a question, George. When you talked about federal inmates, I just want to clarify, you know, you're not talking about ICE detention in our prisons. That just occurred to me when you were talking about that space and that funding coming in.
No, we are talking about convicted
criminals, and we're not we also are not talking about like the violent convictions. Coming across the border without papers is a civil crime. It is not it is not in the criminal code. We put people in our jail that are convicted of crimes or accused credibly of crimes.
Thank
and that's
you.
It.
Yep. All right. I think we have time for one more question. Randy Wheelock has a question from the back.
Remember, I think it's easier to just talk loud. I think it's important to remember that the federal budget this last year was about, for 2025, was $8.6 billion. It was a little over $9 billion last year. The U.S. Forest Service has 193 million acres. That's about $44 an acre, the entire U.S. Forest Service budget. So when we start trying to find who we're supposed to blame for a century or 50 years or 10 years or whatever period of time, I think trying to understand the enormity of the problem is really, really important. We have spent over a century protecting the human-built environment and its value. And so trying to find a way to mitigate 100 years of trying to make sure that the forests look like a carpet is a really big problem that we're saddled with. And I think we, the people, actually supported that policy. And so it's kind of disingenuous of us to come back and point fingers at the federal government, which is us to begin with, and say they've done a crappy job of taking care of our forest when we give them $44 an acre. And out of that, they're supposed to buy all the buildings that they have, run those buildings, hire the people to put in the buildings, and buy the vehicles to put the people in, to send them out to do something about our forest. So I think a local understanding of our own responsibilities in working at the state level to help the federal government at a time when we know its staff has imploded because of reductions in force, whether done by that particular technical name or not, is making the challenge that we have right now really important. The question I have, though, goes back to another subject we talked about earlier, which was the number of state patrolmen on our roads. I know that it was a little under a year ago that the U.S. The State Patrol reported at the collaborative effort and the I-70 coalition that they had they were very proud of having gotten a lot of money to be able to hire more state troopers, and they had a lot of people going through the academy, and they were going to have a large influx of people out onto the roads shortly, and that was just a little less than a year ago. And then I heard that they were very proud of having put more people on the roads in Summit and Eagle counties. And if that's true, I just want to know what the technical problem is with Clear Creek County in being able to solve the same problem here with some of those resources. Thanks.
So, Randy, thank you. I can, speak a bit about that, but maybe more importantly, I have a few connections to go and inquire a little bit further about it. So, like Senator Roberts had said, part of the judicial district is Troop 4C, and that really starts at the top of Eisenhower and heads all the way to the Mesa County line, Pitkin County, Aspen, over Independence Pass, Lake County as well, Summit County, Eagle. And then from the top of Eisenhower down into Jefferson County is 1A. So there are separate troops. So Troop 4C, right, the captain there, the needs in Eagle and Summit and right Garfield and Pitkin County, right, are somewhat different than the needs here are in Clear Creek County. Clear Creek does have a tremendous amount of foot traffic, so to speak, on I-70 because it is the gateway into the mountains. And the further west you go,
it dissipates, right? We don't have quite the volume of traffic in Summit County or Eagle County that they do here in Clear Creek. So to the extent I can answer, right, that Eagle County and Summit County did get some additional troopers, what I will tell you is that Summit County alone, the last numbers that I had, Summit County alone was supposed to have 17 troopers just in Summit County. About 3 years ago, they had four. So even if they doubled, they're still less than half of what they should have in Summit County. So I don't know what that increase is. Summit County is a very difficult place for troopers to be because of the cost of living as well. It's difficult here for, you know, not just the cost of living, but the availability of any kind of housing. So I can't necessarily speak to why Clear Creek County doesn't have any additional troopers, but I will personally reach out to the captain of 1A and find out what information I can.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that this, we're looking at this in our recreation management, we're looking at it in all of our tourism, that the number of people, as you mentioned, everybody that's fanning out into all those roads comes right to the center of Clear Creek County. You know, you could argue that you've got everybody trapped and it's a smaller area that they need to patrol, but you could also argue that we have a higher volume of people passing through us on our roads than any other county in the state experiences unless you're in the Denver metro area. Nobody sees this level of volume, and especially relative to the taxpaying population of our county, it's catastrophically larger than anything anybody else has to deal with. And so a rationalization to use some of those newfound resources in place in this county, I think, would be an incredibly sensible thing to do.
Well, Randy, like I say, I will reach out to the 1A captain in Golden, and I'll set up a meeting with him.
Thank you.
You bet.
All right. Well, I think it's time to bring this very informative session to a close. Thank you so much to our electeds for being here, taking questions. I would like to just mention that we are soon to begin a very, very important election year. This year is probably one of the more important times for everyone to get involved. We will, the Clear Creek Democrats, will be beginning our process with our caucus and assembly on March 7th. Everyone is invited, and we encourage you all to participate. It will be at the new Carlson School. All the information about that will be on our website. Thank you all very much for coming. Please grab a sandwich for tomorrow and be safe on your way home. And thank you all for coming.
All right, everyone. That's your December 8th, 2025 Clear Creek County Town Hall. We heard from our state representatives and our county elected officials, and I feel that I learned quite a few things about what's happening around the state and the county that I didn't know, and I hope you did as well. Until next time, good night, and here's some pre-recorded music for your listening enjoyment.
Don't like that bass played around here, play it some place.